You're listening to the Nuff Said podcast, real strategies for customer success.
Hey everyone, this is Chris, co-founder of Nuff Said, and on today's show, we spoke with Brian LaFile of Google about how to implement digital CS at scale across all business segments, including enterprise. What we learned was that digital CS works best when most interactions are digital, but humans can jump in for short bursts to fix engagement problems. Two, that automated touchpoints can be time-based and behavior-based. Three, that guided in-app experiences can substantially improve retention rates. And four, digital CS can be an excellent way to detect growth opportunities. That's the TLDR. Let's jump in.
My name is Brian LaFile. I currently work as a SaaS solutions programs lead in customer success for Google Cloud. And what that encompasses is the three SaaS products that we offer within Google Cloud. That's security, which is Chronicle, and a number of other security SaaS products, Workspace, which is our collaboration suite, and then Looker. And most recently, I was the founding customer success member at Looker, and so got to see it grow from a small team of one, which is myself, all the way up to about 50 CSMs globally, and through an acquisition by Google Cloud. And so I've been with that team from 2014 to today. I've been at Google for the last 2 years. And prior to that, I was at a couple of different startups focusing on the whole post-sales experience. So my entire career has just been spent on account management, post-sales in SaaS in one form or another.
Thanks, Brian. And you have a really interesting way that you've structured your customer success team because you've really embraced the concept of digitally led CS. And so can you talk a little bit about how the team actually works? So how do you engage with customers? How is the team structured? And what would a typical customer journey look like if I was going to buy a product from you?
Yeah, so we had an interesting challenge as a scaling company. We were moving from bringing on triple digit new logos per quarter, maybe 100, 200 logos a quarter. And as we started to see that go up and the type of company that we brought on board was skewing more towards the enterprise, we really needed to kind of change our focus as to how we went to market with customer success. And so that meant both focusing our CSMs on the companies where they can have the most profound impact, those very large strategic type accounts, where they can have a very consultative engagement. And then we needed to say, okay, well, if we have 40, 50 CSMs on the globe and they need to cover three or four accounts a piece at that largest strategic segment, you can't manage more than that. And so we realized that was going to be a detriment to the whole coverage model of our customer base. Right? You've got 40 CSMs, three account a piece. You're only covering 100 to 150 customers with CSMs. So what do we do with everybody else? We, starting back in 2017, realized that we needed to start leaning into this motion of what is our light touch motion going to look like? And what is our digital success strategy going to look like? And my role starting in 2017 till now has been focusing on that. And so where it stands today is we have our top 3% of our customers with named CSMs, and everybody else is in this pooled model. And that pooled model encompasses north of 3,300 customers. And so with that, we said, well, we've got all of these customers that are now in this kind of pooled segment. How are we going to communicate with them? How are we going to engage proactively? What is the offering that we're going to give to these customers that are going to be across a multitude of different channels? That could be webinars, it could be email, however these customers wanted to engage with us. And so we really started to think about that a couple of years ago. And it was a slow roll at first, right? We started to move these customers over batch by batch as they renewed, and they moved from CSM's portfolios over to this pooled model. And the way that we kind of structured the team to support that was developing, one, a dedicated programs team, which is what I lead, to really focus on the digital channel creation and the programs that are going to support all the customers en masse, regardless of segment. And then we also stood up this kind of specialist organization that focuses on the light touch. And these are the ones that are doing these proactive short burst engagements across those 3,300 customers.
For people who are not aware of this concept of burst engagements, can you talk about what does it mean to have a burst of engagement? How would you even detect when a burst of engagement is needed? And then what is that engagement? What's the structure and makeup of it?
As I mentioned, when we started to slow roll these customers that were moving over into the pool, it was batches of say 10, 20, 30 customers at a time as they were moving over. And what we realized is our initial hypothesis was, oh, these folks can just be supported with our support organization, right? Our sales team, We have renewals managers in place. So we felt like we had the people in place. And we said, we're going to replace our CSMs and actually just try to replicate that motion with digital channels. Well, inevitably, what we found out after running that model for about 6 to 12 months is that there were still customers that, regardless of having all these digital channels available to them, they were either, you know, not succeeding as quickly as they probably should have been, or we were not leaning into the customers where they were having a lot of success. And we had an opportunity to further penetrate that account, go for some sort of expansion opportunity, et cetera. And so these short burst engagements came out of a need where we said there are customers that are kind of risky. They're not adopting Looker, even though they have access to all of these resources available to them. There are companies that are really excelling in their adoption, but there's no one there to push that evangelism story or get a G2 crowds review or some sort of case study. And then there were a lot of customers that were stuck in the middle, this kind of like yellow tier. And we said we needed to develop a team that was going to start to reach out to these customers proactively. And initially we had an idea of, hey, each one of these light touch CSMs could manage volume, right? We'll stick 200 accounts a piece and they'll manage a portfolio of business. But what we found is a lot of companies fall victim to that. And we actually talked to a lot of companies that had tried that model. And what inevitably ends up happening is these individuals can only manage so many concurrent customer conversations and projects at one given time. And so when we talked to some of the light touch specialists that moved into this role initially, they said, realistically, I'm probably talking or managing about 15 to 30 of these engagements with customers. And that could be some sort of case study. It could be managing a customer out of risk. And then we also turned to our team and said, how long are you on average engaging with these customer accounts? And either it was going to be a very short-term engagement, i.e. we're doing some sort of migration of a database and we need some initial support. It could be a longer-term engagement where they're like, hey, I need some support rolling out to this entire division that wants to use Looker. And so what we realized, we start to put some like guardrails around these engagements. And what we found is these engagements typically last between 7 and 30 days. And each one of these specialists can be managing somewhere in the range of about 18 to 24 of these engagements at any concurrent time. And they try to cycle through these customer accounts as their engagement wraps up. And it operates very much like a professional services model on a paid engagement. The only difference being we don't care about billable utilized hours or utilization or anything like that. We just know that, like, look, I'm going to be your person. I'm going to roll into this account. I notice that you're either at risk. I notice that you're really excelling. And I'm going to be here for 7, 30, 15, 21 days. The CSM defines that. And I'm going to be here to assist you, to get you to value in this one particular focused area. And that's what we mean by kind of these short burst engagements. It's almost like a professional services project, but we don't do any of the tracking that goes along with professional services. It's kind of a free value add to this pool of customers.
Some people might have a follow-up on how you think about staffing for that role, but I think you kind of answered the question by talking about having each specialist being able to manage between 18 to 24 accounts at a time. So if you look at your own customer base and see how many are in the bands that you talked about, right? Low engagement or very high engagement, how many customers actually need that attention at any given time?
Right. And the interesting thing about this model is that it kind of moves rotationally, right? So as we've got this pool of customers that need some sort of proactive human element from Looker, we're able to rotate that customer out of the pool, move them into the CSM's portfolio for a short period of time. That customer is getting that kind of extra white glove experience for this brief stint. They're ideally driving towards some desired outcome, i.e. to roll out to some new department, migrations, things like that, escalations, and then they roll off. And we try to be as transparent as possible with our customers about this. And so CSMs in their opening email, hey, I'm going to be here with you for 7 days, right? I really want to make sure that we're able to accomplish X, Y, and Z. Here are the resources I'm going to use to do so. When can you meet? And by doing so, it almost lights a fire under the customer to really engage with us because they know there's some sort of time limit associated with that engagement.
I love the idea of letting the customer know ahead of time how long the CSM will be around for. So I love that strategy. By the way, with respect to figuring out when's the right time to do a touch point, an email or a webinar or some other piece of content, is it time-based relative to their journey with you? Is it based on behavior? How do you decide when to do a touch point?
Yeah, I can kind of speak to our journey. I mean, we focused on what was going to be something that was going to add value quickly at the initial onset of the customer relationship. And so, like many others that are, you know, probably listening to this podcast, we started with the time-based campaigns, right? And we knew that that was going to be easy to trigger off of. We knew when the customers signed their deal. We knew when they closed their implementation. So it made it very easy to start to key off of that initially. And as we got more mature and started to understand how we could use product telemetry to say, hey, I noticed you're not using our mobile application. We have an upcoming webinar about how to use our mobile application for Looker so that your employees can access dashboards on the go. Would that be of interest to you? That's how we started to mature the motion. So we started time-based, and then we started to get more kind of product telemetry triggered over time, but we still keep both campaigns. And I think they play off of one another, right? There are going to be certain things that happen during onboarding. They're just going to be consistent. All customers need to know about it. You need to attend the session. But then other things are going to be more custom to the customer, right? And if there's a lack of adoption, all right, cool. We've got some campaigns and some webinars that might speak to additional use cases of Looker as the customer gets into months 6 through 12 of their relationship with us.
And what about channels? A lot of people think that because it's low touch, you're kind of limited to just email. So can you talk about the different ways you're able to interact with customers or the different types of content you're able to send along that journey?
Yeah. I mean, like many others, we started with email. And in fact, being part of Google, we got access to some of the email research that they did about email campaigns. And like it or not, email campaigns are effective. They do work. You might see low conversion, but there's high intent on those clicks and things like that. It's a good way to get the distribution channel out. And it's something that everybody knows and understands, right? I think in human behavior as society, we each all have an email application on our phones, right? It's one of the easiest ways to communicate. And we started to evaluate. So we started there. And then we said we wanted to put more of kind of a human element beyond these digital channels. So it didn't feel so one way. And we wanted to put video behind it. So then we started to do webinars. And that was kind of channel number two. Channel number three was moving that experience of some of the messaging that we had from some of the messaging and things that we said in our webinars. And we said, well, the users are actually in the application. How do we embed this content there? After that, and we used a partner, Pendo, to kind of do all of our in-app messaging and guides and walkthroughs and things like that. But then we said we really needed to have learning journeys and an e-learning experience for these individuals as well, right? And that's something that we made a strong investment in over the last 12 to 18 months is how do we actually develop connected learning journeys for all of these users so that they can learn on their own pace. As people started to move from home, they didn't want to have to attend a webinar at a specific time. Maybe it didn't work for them. And so they wanted to go through coursework or video work on their own. And so we actually built the Looker Connect platform, which is kind of a learning journey that combines our docs, videos, resources, all the things that we have in the Looker ecosystem, combines it all together around a key persona. And so you can imagine an admin developer persona for Looker taking a certain learning journey and seeing certain content. Whereas, you know, somebody who's a business user that just needs to access dashboards quickly, they're going to go through a different learning journey that's going to be role-based.
You mentioned some of the sophistication you were able to bring in when you partnered up with Pendo for product telemetry and usage data. You also mentioned something about guided journeys that you've tested recently. Can you talk a little bit about what you tested, what the hypothesis was, and what the results were?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we initially started to use Pendo, they were a partner of Looker's way back in the day. I think we joined with them in maybe 2017, right around the time I moved over to programs. And our initial partnership was just doing NPS surveys, pop up a little NPS, put it in the product, and our response rates there were incredible. And so we're like, okay, let's lean into this partnership. We know this works. It's much more effective than the email campaigns. Let's kind of like shift NPS over there. They then started to do our feature tracking. So that we actually have an entire product idea portal where customers can submit and upvote feature requests. And one of the most recent iterations that we took in the partnership was we're seeing really strong engagement on our NPS surveys. They're already doing a lot of our feature tracking. One of the areas we had not explored was actually doing in-app guides communication. So the first thing that we did is we just started with these kind of very simple pop-ups. Hey, your Looker instance has been updated. Here are some of the new features. And it was performing quite well. And we said, how do we take this one step further? And we started to think about how we could actually guide users through the product using Pendo as sort of a guided tour of the product that was persona-based. Because like I mentioned, we already had this kind of Looker Connect platform. We realized that many of the users coming into Looker are for a different reason, right? You might have the CEO that just wants to look at a dashboard once a month. You might have the analyst that actually wants to get into Looker and really add dimensions and measures and do sums and calculus and stuff like that. And then you've got the people that are actually running the show, the admins and developers, right? They're the ones that monitor the instance performance. They're, you know, administering all of the Looker features and things like that. And we started to naturally find these kind of key personas with the help of our UI and UX team. Who are these people? What are they doing? And how can we help guide them through the product? And we listened to some of the feedback that we were getting from customers themselves. So customers that were dropped into a Looker instance, that's a business user. You can imagine this company that's been using Looker for 2, 3, 4 years. And here you are dropped in and you're a brand new employee and you're like, what am I looking at? And there was no guidance at all for this individual. And so we said, let's try to kind of solve for that challenge. And what we ended up building were a sets of guides that takes customers and users through the product based on their permissions. And so we're able to say, we know that you're an admin developer, so you're going to care about different things than just the business user that needs to look at dashboards. And in doing so, we're able to kind of connect all of these kind of guided tours through the product. And it's been one of the most impactful digital channels that we've had to date. We've been able to reach many more users because obviously it's in the product itself. So obviously the reach is increased, but then also the completion rate and the retention rate, most importantly, has been highest amongst any of the digital channels that we've leveraged. And in looking at the cohort of users that have actually gone through that digital guided experience with Pendo, we're seeing a 12% uptick on user retention from month zero to month one to month two, three, four, and it's a sustained increase. And so we're able to say, look, we're actually driving meaningful impact for these brand new users. They're coming into Looker and we're giving them a quick tour of what's what in this product. And in doing so, there's sustained uplift on those users sticking around 4, 5, and 6 months later. And it's been one of the most impactful channels we've had.
So because your team has at this point such a mastery of this kind of automated touch points, communications with customers, how do you share the responsibility of communications across the organization? Because of course, marketing wants to send out surveys and questions to customers. They want case studies and success stories, and product, of course, wants to be able to interview customers and do user tests. So how do you collaborate with other peers who also want access to this communication with customers?
I would say that there's three key teams, and this is just how we've structured it at Looker and into Google. Is first, there's a customer marketing team who's responsible for many of the messaging, the copy, the things that we want to send out to customers. There's product, obviously. When we're trying to do anything in the product, we need to make sure that it fits the style and the guidelines and all the things that go into the product experience itself. And then there's customer success. And customer success brings that voice of what are the customers asking, right? They're hearing this on the front lines. Where are customers having questions? Where can we add value as customers start to mature in their journey with Looker? And the combination of those teams work together collaboratively, right? So I have a weekly with a PM and a customer marketing manager and myself to really dissect what do we want this messaging to look like. And I think that's worked really, really well. But I'm not a copywriter, right? So I lean on the experience of the marketing team and all their design chops to really make sure that the messaging resonates and it kind of fits in with the rest of the brand. Meanwhile, I'm not a product expert, right? So I'm leaning on our PM to fix any of the hashing issues or things like that we might have in anonymizing user data, for instance. And so the combination of that is a really powerful trio that we've had, and it's worked really, really well.
So it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, sounds like customer success is accountable and owns the cadence of how and when customers are communicated to. But Mark, you team up with marketing to make sure you're sending the right content with great copywriters. You're teaming up with product to make sure that the product is being shared appropriately with the right features at the right time, given what the product team wants to focus on. Is that a fair
yep.
summary?
Absolutely.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then what about upsells, cross-sells, expansion just in general is easier to, feels like it's potentially easier to detect when you have a personal relationship with someone and you can call up Bob and ask if Bob would like some training or some access to additional features. How are you able to detect expansion besides like a post onboarding question where you ask, hey, do you want some training on XYZ feature?
Yeah, we do it in a couple of different ways. And I feel like I can't stress the importance of data behind the scenes enough here. I mentioned maybe product telemetry a little bit on the podcast so far, but that really drives a lot of the campaigns that we're running. And when we think about expansion opportunities, it's no different, right? We have all of the data about our customers that are at or nearing their license utilization limit. We have customers that have reached out to support, and those individuals have mentioned something about Powered by Looker. We're channeling that to the sales team. And then whenever we have any sort of digital campaign outreach via email or webinar or something like that, and somebody shows interest, we immediately take that interest and, you know, pass it over to sales. And so, like you said, we have individuals on the sales team that are mapped to these accounts. And so they're the ones that are able to actually run that deal cycle. But we usually treat ourselves as kind of the growth engine of funneling opportunities to those individuals.
That's interesting. Product usage obviously gives you a ton of insight about how the product is being used. But one thing it doesn't capture is how much value the customer thinks they're receiving from the product. Yeah. So low usage doesn't always mean low value, and high usage doesn't always mean high value. So have you thought about ways to capture the customer's perceived value from the Looker product?
We have a very mature motion, which is kind of our value methodology on the named CSM front, right? That's where we're doing these kind of in-depth engagements, really aligning to what's the business value of, you know, this analytics stack being revitalized with Looker from where you were previously in Excel sheets. And I think we've tried as much as possible to kind of take that experience and try to map it to what are the product telemetry factors that we have that might indicate intent from this customer. It's really difficult because ideally, in my ideal world, I would have a CSM on every account and we would do like an in-depth, like value-oriented conversation around what are your business goals? What are you trying to achieve in this business? How can Looker help? What are the value statements we're going to drive? What's the impact pre-Looker and post-Looker? But that's a thorough exercise. And it does work at the high end, and it's almost expected at the high end to be able to prove the ROI and the value that these customers are receiving. And I think when you're thinking about a pool of 3,300 customers, ideally we could do something like that, but we haven't found a way quite yet to do that elegantly. We've tried maybe like a Google form or a survey or something. Hey, what's the value you're receiving right now? What are your business priorities? Things like that. So instead, we're trying to leverage data as much as possible to say, hey, here might be intent of the customer receiving value. But like you said, they're going to be false positives or false negatives. And so we need to sort through the data as much as possible to make sure that that's accurate.
You hear a lot of companies talk about VOC programs. Sometimes that just means a quarterly NPS. Are you doing anything like that at Looker? Where's the qualitative side of the customer's experience?
Yeah, so like I mentioned, we use Pendo for all of our NPS surveys. And so we're able to group it by user persona. So again, I want to stress this. We very much focus and realize that Looker is a very wide SaaS platform. It could be used across every line of business, but it's also fairly deep. You might have an end business user, you might have an analyst, you might have the admin or developer. And so it's really difficult. We try to orient as much as possible around those personas. And when an individual logs into Looker and they're presented with an NPS survey from Pendo, we're able to capture what permissions they have. So we kind of get an understanding of, hey, what's this user all about? Now, that NPS program, it just runs constantly, right? And that's a partnership between customer success and product. And so literally 100% of comments that go into that little comment box, product is reading, right? Now it's on CS to really synthesize the masses of data to draw out the themes of, hey, what are the challenges that we're hearing for our analysts? What are the challenges we're hearing from our admins and our end users? And really synthesize that. But that's something that we meet with product about quarterly. And it's been really powerful. Now, alongside of that, we also have a very traditional customer advisory board, right? And so that's where we're able to hear from some of the larger strategic customers on their business challenges, what they'd like to see from Looker. And so that's how we're kind of tackling that. It's kind of like the one to many is going out to every user across all of our customers and gathering that voice from all users, and then also having in-depth conversation with executives.
So Brian, let's go ahead and wrap up this conversation with the final topic here, which is how customer success can do a better job of influencing product, the product roadmap and features. And you mentioned that your team has had a big influence on product. I'm curious to hear how you've done that.
Yeah, I think that we started traditionally like a lot of CS teams, right? We were the ones that were funneling the issues of the customers, the bugs, right? And that's where we started. Hey, this customer's complaining, they're running into this issue. And we really wanted to make sure that we had a kind of solid process, stood up to funnel all of that feedback from CS and from the field back to product. And that's where we started. And I think that's where most CS teams start. then we said, okay, we now have this kind of this process. We're using Zendesk to track all the bugs. We're able to prioritize them based on the number of customers impacted and the ARR impacted. So we're providing all of this insight to the product team to say, look, like if you go and fix this one bug, you are going to impact 230 customers totaling $14 million of ARR. And providing that insight, just that alone helped with our relationship with the product team in order to quantify kind of the business value of what they were fixing and what they were prioritizing and working on. And of course, that led to more in-depth conversation as we went through the analysis. So we have quarterly cadence with the product team, kind of the top bugs that we're seeing that are impacting customers to be baked into the roadmap. And so that's where we started with bugs. Then we said, okay, what are the things that the customers are asking for, but they're not really receiving? And it's not in the product today, the feature requests. And we leveraged our partner Pendo again to actually stand up a kind of product feature repository, because at one point in time, we had CSMs that were just managing spreadsheets for all of their customers with all the different feature requests, and it was a totally unscalable solution. And so we really needed to productize that. And beyond that, we found that our CSMs were often just the middleman of just carrying this information from the customer to the product team. And so we asked ourselves, is that something that the customers can input themselves? And often we did see from our CSMs, there could be something lost in translation, right? The customer says something in a meeting, hey, I want this feature for this use case. CSM tries to synthesize it. And by the time it got to the product team, it may not be exactly what that customer initially had asked for. And so that's where we kind of pushed on this motion to lean into our relationship with Pendo and say, look, we need to have a centralized repository that both product and CS and support are all looking at, and customers themselves can enter in their own requests. So we're getting those requests verbatim from the customers. But beyond that, we can also have customers upvote and downvote. So then product has a single view into what are the most asked for features from the customer base. And so that was step two. And then step three is where we've really partnered with product is not just bugs and feature requests, but more of this in-app guide experience. So we're actually guiding users through the product. And I would say that's more of the, you know, proactive motion that we have today with the product team, but really partnering with them about how we can be more thoughtful for areas of the product that might be a little bit more complex or harder to use. We really need to guide users through that experience. And so that's where we've been able to kind of mature the partnership. And it's worked really, really well. But I think that one of the things to call out is just making sure that you're bringing value to the product team and positioning how this is going to impact the customer base and put dollars around it. And that's helped in every one of the conversations that we've had, whether it's been bugs or feature requests or the guides. We had this initial proposal, how we thought it was going to impact said ARR, and the product team was excited to partner with us on.
Yeah, that's amazing feedback, Brian. You know, we're January 2022. So many leaders are thinking about how to integrate a digitally led CS strategy into their existing programs. And you, Brian, and Looker have been thinking about this and implementing this concept for almost 5 years. So the future of digital CS looks like what Brian has implemented. And so for that reason, Brian, I'm very thankful that you've been willing to join us, share your experiences, go into detail about how you've implemented your programs, and most of all, helping us as a CS community get better.
And that's it for this week's episode of NuffSaid. To learn more about NuffSaid's proactive intelligence platform, you can visit NuffSaid.com. That's NuffSaid.com. And you can follow NuffSaid on LinkedIn. To tune in to more real customer success strategies, head over to your podcast platform of choice and make sure you're subscribed. Thanks for tuning in. NuffSaid.